What is going on, everybody? Welcome back. A new edition, a new podcast here at FTNFantasy.com. It is For the Numbers. Really exciting podcast. Not just myself, though. Adam Pfeiffer here, in case you are new. Bunch of other awesome analysts from FTN Fantasy combining for every single type of fantasy analysis that's driven by the analytics here at FTN Fantasy and FTNData.com. Really excited. This will be the first edition, for at least my edition, of the podcast, but check out all the other great work as well. Today we're talking about rookies, and why wouldn't you? It's April 15th, Monday. We have 10 days until the NFL draft, and I'm ready, but are you ready? That is the question. And to answer that question, I brought on one of my favorite people in the entire industry, in the entire world. It's Dave Richard from CBSFantasy.com. Dave, appreciate the time. Always fun when we get to turn on the mics and chat. How are you doing? Are you ready? Are you at the point now where it's like, okay, we've overanalyzed, and now, because that's what I feel like happens when you get to about the 7 to 10 day mark until the draft. It's like, how much can we possibly break down, as we're about to sit here and break down all the rookies, of course. But Dave, I appreciate the time.
Dude, it's great to be on with you, Adam. It's great to be on FTN For the Numbers. I like it a lot. And I like this draft class a lot. I think we're looking at a lot of players that can make an impact in fantasy, mainly through the passing game. I'm not sure about the running backs. And I've got the way to combat the whole, what you were talking about. It's the last week, the last 10 days of the NFL draft, and everything's getting stale, and you know, we're just tired of coming up with things to talk about. Man, I keep finding players to look at, and I really take my time when I evaluate the big time players in the draft. So now I'm scrambling. I'll tell you, I've spent all day watching running backs, trying to find one guy, Adam,
yeah,
that might be able to be the guy for fantasy. There is no Bijan Robinson in this draft. There is no Jahmyr Gibbs. Is there a Zach Charbonnet? I think we got some guys that can be better than Zach Charbonnet was last year. Looking forward to talking about them, but really looking forward to talking about the quarterbacks and the top receivers in the draft.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, leading up to the draft, there's going to be so much going on. And for the draft, obviously, too, we're looking at it from so many different lens, right? Like fantasy, dynasty, real life NFL. How are these players going to help these teams? Mm-hmm. There's also obviously betting aspects. So a lot going on. I know a lot's going on over at CBS Fantasy, CBSSports.com. I always love what you guys are doing over there. So what do you guys have planned, you know, leading up to the draft, during the draft, all of that, as we are now just 10 days away?
So I got something for the fantasy lovers out there, and I got something for the sports bettors out there.
Perfect.
For the fantasy folks out there, of course, we're doing our main podcast. Not only that one, but also the FFT Dynasty podcast. It's all dynasty talk.
Yep.
All
I was time. On it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I know you were. I know.
And my team was terrible, and Heath talked about it, drafting while recording a podcast. Not the easiest.
Did you feel a little bit better about it when you were done?
So what threw me off, and I don't want to get too off topic, but what threw me off during the draft was it was without the rookies. So I've been doing a lot of mocks with the rookies. So that definitely threw me off. I had the 12th pick. It was super flex. So I didn't like despise my team, but I clearly made some mistakes. But that's why you do these mock drafts. So
hell yeah, man, that's why you mock. That's why you go through it. You figure out what you like and what you don't like. I put myself through tough draft strategies in my mock drafts all off season long, just so I know which draft strategy I really like. And really what I ultimately settle on every year is know all the draft strategies, Adam, but just go with best player available. When you're out, the player that you love the most, the one that you think will be the most productive, that's really what you do. And then you pivot when you've got a need to fill. And that's kind of what NFL teams do in the draft as well. There's a bunch of players that they'd love to have on their team, but they've got a need to fill. Chicago's got a need to fill at quarterback. Dallas has a need to fill at running back. When they're up and picking, they're going to keep those needs in mind. They can't just take the very best player every single time. So there's the whole fantasy aspect. And then I've been on a NFL draft prop show for the last 3 weeks. You can find it on YouTube, youtube.com/sportsline. And look for the NFL Draft Player Prop Show. It's me, it's a college football expert named Eric Cohen, and a player prop expert named Prop Stars. His real name is Alex. We call him Prop Stars. It's a very fun show, lots of energy, lots of picks. Tell people maybe make a little bit of money on the NFL Draft if they wanted to.
Awesome. Be sure to keep an eye on everything going on over at CPS. Absolutely love everybody over there. And before we get started, I will say, if you're listening to this on Monday or if you're listening to it on Tuesday, you might be listening to this when FTN has the new site redesign. We're launching the new site. Really exciting stuff. And also, Jeff Ratcliffe just released his rookie guide, which will be updated after the NFL draft for all the landing spots. But he goes through all the players, how he views them as prospects, and then obviously he'll react to everything after we see the impacts from the NFL draft, which is just, I cannot stress it enough, 10 days away. Dave, let's get to these quarterbacks to start with, though, because it is, we talk about how loaded the receiver class is. It's a very damn good quarterback class, too, led, of course, at the top by what everybody expects to be, you know, the avenue the Bears go with the first overall selection and Caleb Williams. I don't really need to ask, at least I don't think, Dave, how good you think he is, because he's, you know, it becomes cliche at this point, but he's a borderline generational prospect. But how good do you think he can be for fantasy in year one? Because dynasty-wise, Superflex mock drafts, unless you somehow have three amazing quarterbacks, he's probably the 101 in most Superflex rookie drafts. But I don't know the last time if we've seen a rookie quarterback step into the situation that Caleb Williams is theoretically going to step into. Like, you obviously have DJ Moore and Keenan Allen, DeAndre Swift out of the backfield, Cole Kmet. They still have the ninth overall selection, which they could go Rome Odunze and then have just an absolute trio that any rookie quarterback would love. So dynasty-wise, he's going to be in that top 10 to 12 range, I would imagine, right away. But, like, be somebody that could sneak into the top, you know, 12 to 14? I know the quarterback position is always loaded in fantasy, but could he be that good as a rookie in year one with how good he is and how good the situation seems to be in Chicago?
I think if fantasy managers are even more in love with the receiving core in Chicago after the draft and they're comfortable with the offensive line, you'll see people kind of reach for him. It's hard to use the term reach with a guy that might be the 12th quarterback off the board.
Right.
But you kind of get what I'm saying.
Because to me, that's probably his ceiling, in my opinion, even sure, if everything looks great in Chicago, is like where that's the ceiling I could see him being drafted, because that's probably the range of where you see Jordan Love and Brock Purdy maybe and Kyler Murray. And I think I would still much rather have those guys. But man, like I was going to say I've been doing this a long time. I haven't compared to a lot of people like yourself, but like, have you ever seen a rookie quarterback step into a spot that he's going to step into?
No, not like this, because usually the team that picks first in the NFL draft is
exactly
the worst team from the year before, and it's just Chicago got very lucky with the trade they made a year ago with Carolina. So it's really an enviable spot, and you think about, I feel bad for the quarterback that's going to go to New England. You know why? And by comparison, like, Washington isn't that bad compared to New England. It's just how things shake out. But Chicago, obviously, with these great receivers that they have, and I just ultimately think that it's going to be a really good for Caleb, and it's with a coach that he's familiar with. He's been to camps that this coach has been at when he was in high school, so I assume that they have a relationship already. It's going to be an offense that'll probably be half West Coast type stuff and half what Caleb was running at Southern Cal, which is the air raid, which also broke down because the offensive line that he played behind was terrible and it forced him to scramble. But that actually helps him now because he's so good on these creative plays. These, you know, once upon a time, Russell Wilson was a guy that made huge plays off schedule. And I think Caleb Williams, he's going to be fine when he's in structure of the play. He follows the play to a T. But when things break down and the pass rush gets to him, there's enough evidence out there that he can make great things happen. Not just good things happen at him, but really be special. On top of that, he was great at the goal line. He had 11 carries at the one, and he scored on 9 of them. So he's going to be a threat in the red zone. And honestly, that's the thing that put him at the top of my QB rankings, was how good he was in the red zone at Southern Cal and how good of a runner that he is near the goal line. He's a big dude, so he can make those physical plays. And I think he's got a great arm. I hesitate to use the term generational talent. I don't know if he's that. But is he the best quarterback in this class? Yes. Is he the best quarterback between this class and last class? And I was a Stroud guy. Mm-hmm. I got a tough time, especially after seeing Stroud for a year, saying that Williams is better than Stroud, but I might have had Caleb over Stroud, being completely honest.
Yeah, and it's also tough
if you were in last year's draft class.
Yeah, I mean, recency bias, too. Like, we just watched what T.J. Stroud did. And to me, the most impressive part of what Stroud did, it wasn't like he had these really efficient stats and advanced stats off a really basic offensive scheme. Like, he was throwing deep post routes to Nico Collins. The connection they had on those deep post routes, like, he was amazing. And I think Caleb Williams is, you know, I feel like anytime we say generational prospect, I always go back to thinking of, like, Trevor Lawrence when we were comparing, oh, is he the best quarterback since Andrew Luck?
Right. Yeah. Lawrence, Luck, Burrow.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are the only three. I'm trying, maybe there's another one between Luck and now that we would call generational, like, can't miss type of quarterback. I think that's it.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting to see. Because I think that point you mentioned, like, you kind of forget it too, but, like, the Bears weren't the worst team in football last year, but with the Carolina trade, like, and, like, let's look at it this way too. Their defense was quietly very good down the stretch last season. The offensive line wasn't a train wreck. They were, you know, they obviously added pieces, and I'm actually very excited to see this offense without Luke Getsy, because I know you're, you know, a Chicago guy. I don't believe you, like, are, like, you're sitting rooting for the Bears every week, right? Like,
not
you're not
anymore,
like that
no.
invested.
No.
But man, watching, and this is why I've always defended Justin Fields, watching some of the route combinations that Luke Getsy designed last year, like, there were so many different times where multiple receivers were literally running the same route. It was really bad. So I'm excited to see I agree with you. I think it's going to be a combination of the West Coast and what Caleb Williams is running. So yeah, I think his ceiling is, like, if he's as good as he's been in college and he's really this good, like, with this supporting cast, he could be easily a top 12, 13 quarterback in fantasy year one. It wouldn't surprise me at all. What about the second, third, fourth? Because there's a lot of really good quarterbacks. You have Drake May. You have Jaden Daniels. You have maybe the most polarizing player in this class in terms of, like, where he's going to go and how high do these teams value him, J.J. McCarthy. And then you have Michael Penix and Bo Nix. I think those guys can play too. Like, how many quarterbacks do you think go in the first round? Is it just the first four, do you think? Or could we see Las Vegas or Denver draft a quarterback where they're at 12 and all of a sudden we have five quarterbacks off the board?
When I was in Mobile for the Senior Bowl, I talked to a bunch of NFL folks about this, and the consensus in Mobile was that Penix was a third round pick.
Okay.
Things have changed since then, though.
Do you have any idea if that's strictly because of how he's kind of had a season-ending injury like most of his collegiate career?
I think that's part of it. And I think part of it is the way he finished last season, literally the last game against Michigan, did not go his way. Mm-hmm. And that's a pro-style defense. And so if that's how he's going to play against pro defenses, and he's already an older prospect, and there's an injury concern, and his deep ball accuracy isn't very good. His short accuracy is great, and the dude's got an awesome arm. It's fun to watch him throw.
The Texas game, he was absolutely phenomenal. Like,
yeah.
the throws he made were so good.
But I don't know if coaches can – here's what I wonder. There's obviously going to be at least one team that misses out on one of the first four quarterbacks. Okay, you know, Caleb, Daniels, May, McCarthy. That's my order. It's the chalky order, but that's my order. And the question will then become, how badly does that fifth team want to get a quarterback? And I think if your backup quarterback, or you're the only quarterback on your roster, your would-be backup quarterback, is Jarrett Stidham or Sam Darnold, you're going to be pressing to get that quarterback spot filled.
Right.
You can't really wait till round three. Because you could really be in deep trouble if you come out of this draft without one of these guys.
It wouldn't surprise me if we saw, like, a trade back into the late first round from a team.
Maybe.
Now, I know some of these teams don't have insane draft capital, so that definitely hurts them.
Right. That's Denver's biggest problem.
Exactly. It's exactly what I was thinking of. There's a lot that I do like about Michael Penix. Like, he is so good at limiting sacks. He was really good at that. And, like, I do think the arm talent and the arm strength is absolutely there. Didn't love that there wasn't a ton of off-platform stuff from him. Like, he had, like, a 34% completion rate outside the pocket. Like, that wasn't the greatest to see. But man, like, if there was a quarterback that, like, for instance, like, if Minnesota somehow can't package 11 and 23 and get up to J.J. McCarthy or Drake May, like, I think at 23, if he's there, they should absolutely take Michael Penix.
Or do they panic and take him at 11?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to not know how the other, you know, 31 teams, right, you know, kind of have each player ranked. But it's possible, especially because we know the top four are going in the top 10, right? So do they see that and say, okay, does a team, does do other teams that need a quarterback say, okay, well, the top four are gone, we can wait? Or do they say, oh, crap, the top four are gone, we can't wait? I think that's why the NFL draft is so interesting, because you don't know what the other teams are thinking. What about Drake May, Jaden Daniels? It seems like the consensus is Jaden Daniels 2 to Washington, Drake May 3, potentially, unless the Minnesota Vikings trade up, 3 to New England. I mean, I agree, Caleb is definitely the QB1, but there's a lot to like with Drake May and Jaden Daniels, too.
I think there's less to fix with Daniels than there is with May, but you just have to accept that Jaden Daniels is going to be lean. But last year, I mean, everybody talked about, oh, Bryce Young, he's so short. He was lean, mm-hmm, and he managed to survive most of the season. And you know who else was lean in last year's draft class? Was C.J. Stroud, who was taller than Bryce Young. But it's not like C.J. Stroud is this built dude. He's pretty slender. And Daniels was too. And yeah, you can find footage of him getting smashed when he sacked or hit behind the line of scrimmage. But when he took off and ran, and I hate starting with running with him because he is a quarterback, but this is just where I put myself. He protected himself pretty well when he ran with the football. But I think he's fundamentally sound. I don't think you have to worry about his footwork, his throwing motion, anything like that. I think he's excellent when he reads defenses before the snap. I think he's got great accuracy both on short and deep throws. Some of the best in college football last year. No surprise, he was the Heisman winner. Then you get to the mobility, and it doesn't necessarily mean that he's always going to take off and run. In fact, he might have done that too much. After he got to his second read, he would just take off and run. But he ran the offense that LSU gave him, and he did a great job with it. The thing that I like best about Daniels, if you go back and you watch him against Arizona State, and I'm guessing that you've done this, Adam, it's almost like a different quarterback. He looks way more raw when he's playing in the Pac-12. His footwork isn't as good. Looks like he's panicky. And now when you watch him at LSU, he's just cool customer, hung in the pocket, pressure came, didn't seem to bother him. Sometimes he'd take off and run. Once in a while, he actually threw the ball, and it was on target. I think he's a great thrower. You just have to you have to kind of coach him up a little bit about making sure you stay in the pocket. There were times where he was under no pressure.
Yep, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, he's got to eliminate that, but that's coachable. You know, yeah. And like Penix, like we could talk about his deep ball accuracy. Man, if his footwork gets better, then he might be better there too. That's fixable. That's coachable. And it's just a matter of, can Daniels learn that in one off season and then translate it and be a better passer right away? Can he kind of pull what Anthony Richardson sort of did? You didn't see a lot of it because he didn't play a lot, but I thought he was a better thrower than he ever was in college. I thought his footwork was cleaner. And if someone can get to Daniels, whether it's in Washington or New England or wherever, I think he can be an outstanding thrower on top of being a great runner. And anybody who's played fantasy for more than 2 years knows, if you've got a quarterback that's good at throwing but great at running, that's going to equal a lot of fantasy points. And so there's a case that could be made where Daniels will probably get picked within three quarterback slots of Caleb Williams in fantasy drafts, meaning he might not be taken with the very next pick, but you could see Caleb Williams and this sounds so crazy, but this is fantasy. You could see Caleb Williams go ahead of Kirk Cousins and Matthew Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, Jared Goff, guys that are good, but not necessarily guys that you're craving to have. They don't have that sky-high upside. All right, maybe you make the case for Cousins, but I think we want to see him on the field first. You could make that same case with Daniels, that upside case, and that might be why he goes ahead of some slash most of those older statuesque quarterbacks.
It's going to happen. It happens every year. I think so, too. It happens every year, and, you know, Worst case scenario, you pair Jaden Daniels with, you know, a Jared Goff, and you're pretty set. Then Daniels hits how he could hit, you'd be starting Jared Goff, you know, maybe one other week because
you're cutting Jared Goff.
Yeah, too. Yeah. Like, because the Washington landing spot, if that is what happens, I like it. Obviously, you know, Cliff's there now. The interesting thing with this team is, like, you expect Cliff to be a pass heavy offense, but like, which he will, but like, this team literally abandoned the run last year anyway to start with. They were top five in neutral script pass rate, top five in early down pass rate. They're going to play up in pace. Obviously, that's something Cliff's done during his time in Arizona from 2019 to 2021. Arizona was sixth in early down pass rate. They were second in average seconds per snap, first in no huddle rate. 35% of the time they ran no huddle. So that's going to be fun. Obviously, Curtis Samuel's gone, but you still have Jahan Dotson and Terry McLaurin. I don't love the tight end room, but another team in Washington, they have a lot of draft capital in this class. They can make other moves. They can draft a Jatavion Sanders at tight end. They can do a lot of things to help Jaden Daniels. So cool. I'm definitely excited about him in Washington.
And sure. Let me put one last thing in your head.
Yeah, go for it.
I would not be surprised if this is not a Cliff Kingsbury / Brian Johnson offense.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Johnson, who was with Philadelphia, is now in Washington, and he's not the offensive coordinator, and I don't think he'll be the play caller. I think that's going to fall on Kingsbury, but there's kind of been some hints this offseason that this is not going to necessarily be a replica of what Kingsbury did at Arizona. And remember, it was kind of Lincoln Riley's baby at USC. Right. It wasn't Kingsbury's. It's just the same kind of banner on it, the air raid, but I think there were some tweaks to it. I wonder if this gets tweaked a little bit more, and Johnson has a lot of say over just how the whole offense is curated. When Johnson was at the University of Florida, the Gators were recruiting Jaden Daniels. It's a long time ago. It's pre-COVID, but it happened. And I wonder if that is – I don't know if there's a connection there. I don't know enough people to know if Brian Johnson was a big part of that recruiting or not. But I think that brain trust of Kingsbury and Johnson could be very, very good for Jaden Daniels, for obvious reasons, the dual threat reasons and the up-tempo reasons.
Yeah, and obviously it feels like every day now there's a different rumor surrounding Brandon Ayuk, but Washington has draft capital to make a potential trade, and you have the Arizona State connection, so that would be kind of fun.
That would be sick.
If that did happen, which, again, like, what would you put the...
By the way, they are very close.
Exactly, and what would you put the odds of Brandon Ayuk being traded on draft night? I think it's very possible.
I think it's possible, too. So I don't know if and this is what we talk about on that Early Edge NFL Draft Prop Show. We talk about odds all the time. Could it? I would listen if I were the odds maker at the Adam Pfeiffer Casino. I would not make it very high. I'd probably say like +225 that he gets traded, because the 49ers have a tough decision to make. Are they all in for this year, or can they trade him for a late first round pick to a team that needs a wide receiver? Buffalo. Excuse me. And then use that late one to get a receiver that might fit exactly what they're looking for to replace IU. Could they go and get is Worthy the guy because of his deep speed? Is Leggett the guy because he can make plays after the catch? These are
have fun tackling San Francisco with him and Deebo Samuel.
I'm telling, and don't forget about Kittle. Yeah, so, of course. But I think that it's not the same as having Ayuk. Ayuk has, it brings a different dimension to that offense. He's an after catch guy, but he's not physical. So I'm curious to see what they do, but they might just sit on Ayuk for one more year, and their window is still very much open to make a Super
Bowl. They also have a potential out with Debo's contract after the season too. So there's a lot of, that's why that's a team with, like, for dynasty, like wide receivers. Like, I'm just kind of like, what do I do? Like, do I trade for one of these guys? Do I just let it? Because it's really tough right now. It's very interesting.
Well, it's easy with Ayuk because you know that he's young and he's going to be
in the league. Yeah, and he's just really, really good.
He's really fast, yeah.
Let's close it out with quarterbacks before we move on to the other positions. Drake May and J.J. McCarthy. We have to talk about especially J.J. McCarthy because I honestly feel like he might be the most polarizing player in this class at this point. Everybody's talking about him. Where is he going to go? How high is he going to go? Should he be going as high as he is projected to go? Obviously, people are talking about he wasn't asked to do a ton. He didn't throw the ball a ton. But, man, like, it's a pro-style offense. He made a lot of impressive off-platform throws. He has enough arm strength. He's mobile enough. Like, is he going to be inside the top five from a trade-up from Minnesota or even, you know, if Denver traded up or something? And then Drake May seems like three to New England. Wouldn't be the best landing spot, but know, Drake May's got the, you know, a lot of the tools you look for at the quarterback position. I do think his ball placement is very inconsistent right now, and he does take some bad turnovers. But again, like you mentioned, coachable rookie quarterbacks. You're not going to find a quarterback that just has absolutely zero flaws. So what do you think of these two quarterbacks?
So I'll start with May. I think he's got potential to be one of probably the second best thrower in the class. Just huge size, big arm. Arm strength is good for him. But the accuracy, you brought it up, Adam, that's a factor. I think his footwork and throwing mechanics, and I'm in the minority when it comes to just the throwing mechanics, but the footwork is something that even May has admitted to needing work on, and he has worked on it in his past. I think he needs to really get better at that. He needs to make sure that he's in sync with his eyes all the time. And I feel like his throwing motion is a little elongated, and that's why he was late on a lot of throws. And that kind of bothered me, but it's fixable. Struggling to consistently identify where the pass rush pressure came from, that's another issue for me. So that's also something that's fixable. He fixes those two things. I think you could make the case that he's the second best quarterback in this draft class because he's got a cannon. Even though he couldn't necessarily diagnose where the pass rush pressure was coming from, he was generally cool in the pocket. He's easily the best anticipatory passer in the class. That means he's throwing to spaces, not to people. Didn't shy away from tight window throws. Definitely has the arm strength to hit far side deep throws. And he's athletic. Not as fast as Jaden Daniels, probably not as fast as Caleb Williams, but he can run like them. He can move like them.
He doesn't hesitate. Like, if it's not there, he's gone.
Yeah, and he can work at the goal line too. So if he goes to a place like New England, well, hell, man, he might end up being the whole offense there. There's going to be times where things break down, and he goes and he makes the play. And he could be a lot of fun. I don't think anybody's going to be excited to take the quarterback of the Patriots in fantasy drafts. So he's not going to fall into that bucket of upside quarterback like I talked about with Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, unless he goes to Minnesota. And that's where he's got a connection to Josh McCown. It's a team that's desperate to move up. If the Patriots, you know, maybe the Patriots have something cooked up where they trade down first and then they trade back up to get McCarthy, that could be part of their plan. No one knows. We'll find out in 10 days. But I think Drake May does have the upside to be a great quarterback. I just worry about him being one right away, with the caveat that if he goes to a team that's going to throw a lot and has a ton of great pass catchers like Minnesota, he's probably going to fall into some really good production. And I can say the exact same thing for McCarthy, who I think has actually got the highest floor of, let's see, do I really think he's got a higher floor than Daniels or Caleb Williams? Probably right behind those guys. Certainly a higher floor than Drake May, because he's got good footwork. He's got a compact delivery. He's tough. He made plenty of tight window throws. I think he can be a good anticipatory thrower. He's fine throwing while under pressure. I think the concerns with him are arm strength. I don't think it's quite as good as others in the class. And he just, for whatever reason, this is something that our editor, Dan Schneier, noticed, and I think others have noticed it too. He's bad throwing to his left, and that's just weird. So if the mechanics can get fixed there, then, you know, if he's got the full field to work with, he'll be fine. So I think if McCarthy goes to New England, it's going to be easy to not take him. If he goes to Denver, easy to not take him. You don't even give him a second thought, unless it's a super flex type of league. But if he goes to Minnesota, I think he can run an offense there and be at least serviceable. And more importantly, be good for Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison and TJ Hockenson when Hockenson comes back. I like these quarterbacks. I don't love them in terms of May and McCarthy, but I think that if they land in that magical spot, they can help their pass catchers put up good numbers.
Yeah, Minnesota especially. Like, I know a lot of it was more volume-based, but we saw Mullins have, like, multiple 300, 400-yard games down the stretch last season. And, like, you won't find, especially when he's healthy with Hockenson, you won't find many situations better than that where you're throwing to Jefferson, Addison, Hockenson. Aaron Jones is a massive upgrade, and especially in the passing game, from anything they had in the backfield last year. And you have two really good tackles on the offensive line. Like, I think it's a really good spot, and that's why I think the excitement, like, in dynasty leagues for rookie drafts, like, whoever goes to Minnesota it wouldn't surprise me if they climbed ahead of, if they were drafted as a QB2 in some rookie drafts, because the landing spot is that good. And I'm excited to see where these quarterbacks go.
Sure. Like if it's May to Minnesota,
yeah,
would you take them ahead of Jaden Daniels in New England?
It's going to be a lot more of a conversation. That's for sure.
Yes, I agree.
That is for sure. Let's go to the running backs, Dave. I only want to spend time on a couple here because the wide receiver position is just so deep, and I want to get your take on a lot of those players. But three players at this position that I definitely want to talk about: Jonathan Brooks, Blake Corum. I guess it was mostly those two, but also you have to have Trey Benson in there.
Sure.
Let's start with Jonathan Brooks, because I think if it weren't for the ACL, if you ask 10 people who the top player in this class is at the position, I think 8 would say Jonathan Brooks. Right now, I think it's more like maybe 50-60%. For me, it's still Jonathan Brooks as the top player in this class. I just think, especially because his game, I think, can translate the best to fantasy, because his natural pass catching ability is insane. His hands are so soft. He was used, I think it was over 11 yards per reception in the passing game. Like, watching him in the passing game is why I'm so excited about him in fantasy. If he gets second round draft capital to a team like Dallas or the Chargers or one of these teams that we know need a running back, I am going to be absolutely thrilled about him. There's obviously some connections with Dallas too. Obviously, playing in Texas, I believe it was Matthew Betts from the Fantasy Footballers pointed out that I think that one of Dallas's team doctors actually did the ACL surgery.
It's true.
So that's interesting. And I just think his game for a fantasy perspective, he's so good in the passing game. That obviously we love for fantasy. That's how you're going to get more of your points based off, receptions or carries. But also the contact balance. Like, sometimes he will run a little bit too upright, but there's some really good contact balance that he showcased. It reminded me a lot of Kendre Miller from last year a little bit in that regard. So thoughts on Jonathan Brooks? Is he your top player in this class? Are you worried about the ACL? And if he's not, who is your top player in this class?
I think he's my top player by default. I don't love this class.
That's very fair.
I don't think there's a running back that can – I don't know how many three-down running backs there are. Brooks is certainly one of them, but I don't know how many – let's put it this way. All these running backs are flawed, okay? And Brooks' flaws are kind of obvious, the fact that he's coming off of a torn ACL. That shouldn't be something that slows him down for the rest of his career. We know how ACLs have kind of become less of
a serious. He's also going to be, 21 when the season starts? So he's
definitely
still very
helps
young.
His case that he's young. Absolutely. But you've watched him play. How many times did you see him get caught from behind?
Yeah.
I don't think he's got the same
speed,
type of top
The long
gear.
Speed is not there.
Right. It's not the same type of top gear. That's not a deal breaker. Okay, but that one of the ways that running backs gain max yardage is with speed. And Brooks has speed. It's just not the top end speed, the top gear that you talk about. So let's talk about what he does do. He's an awesome cutback runner. I think his agility is smooth. I think his vision is good. I think his hands are excellent. You already referenced that. I think he did get a boost by some really good blocking at Texas, but he made defenses pay for it. That's what you want. The make you miss factor is going to be one way that he picks up a lot of extra yards. And I can't say that he's necessarily physical. So it's really more about him being just a smooth mover when he's got the ball in his hands. And that's perfect for zone scheme runs. It's perfect for when you're out in space after you make a catch and you make a guy miss. He made a guy miss a lot. But that physicality, man, I don't know how many times he's going to be able to get a lot of yards after contact. It depends on the type of contact. Last season, he only had 5 carries from the 1 yard line for Texas. He scored on one of them. 15 carries from the 5 or closer, he scored on 6 of them. You want those averages to be, or those numbers to be higher. You don't want it to be below 50%, that's for sure. And he only had the 1 year of big time experience at Texas. I know that he was not as, he was recruited, but not by a lot of major programs. And this is after he had 62 rushing touchdowns in his last high school season, 62. So really good player, but there's something that I can't quite put my finger on. Maybe it is the speed, but there's something about just like the entirety of his career where he's been kind of either overlooked or underrated. I'm not sure what to make of that. And now we just don't know how the ACL is going to hold up. It's different for everybody. I mean, we saw it last year in fantasy where Breece Hall came back from the ACL. He looked great. Javonte Williams came back from the ACL, not so great. It depends on the player. It's probably more, you know, fortuitous for them than anything else. Sometimes it's good luck, sometimes it's not. When you come back from an ACL, it takes a little bit longer. But I do think he's very talented. I do love the idea of him in an offense where he can catch, you know, 50 passes, get 65 targets over the course of a season. And so if he goes to Dallas, I don't think he's LA's type of running back, but if he went to Dallas, maybe Las Vegas, I think we'd be excited to have him on our fantasy teams.
Yeah. You mentioned him maybe not being the player that the Chargers target, but obviously there might be a connection with Blake Corum there. Corum to me, at one point, he was my top player in this class. The size is obviously a little bit concerning. I'm not overly worried about it because some of the players he reminds me of, Devin Singletary, Kyren Williams, they've been, you know, Kyren obviously had a ridiculous year last year. Singletary's been, had years where he's been good. Last year he was good in fantasy. I think he was a running back 13 when he took over that backfield for Houston. Corum to me, though, like, vision, his vision is amazing. It's one of my favorite, you know, aspects of a really good player is the vision, and I think his is fantastic. Obviously, he played in a pro-style offense. He obviously was, you know, had a great, he had a great surrounding cast too. But he has a lot of these moves, these jump cuts that are really, really impressive.
Very much, yes.
Like there was a game, I believe it was 2022, not 2023, but it was a game against Northwestern where he froze multiple defenders multiple times with these like stutter jump cut moves, and they were really impressive. In the passing game, he wasn't asked to do it a lot. And when he did get usage in the passing game, mostly dump offs. So like, that's why I think there's a little bit of Singletary too, because Singletary did nothing in the passing game in college and not really much in at the NFL level so far. But I think the vision wise is why he reminds me of Singletary, Kyren Williams, maybe a little bit of Jaylen Warren as well. How worried are you about the injuries he's had? He's kind of the opposite of Brooks, where he's, you know, pretty much he's more of an older prospect at the position. And is the chalk the Chargers? It feels like it is. But I wonder how high he goes, too.
I don't know how excited teams are going to be to take him. It just depends on if they think he can be the same type of physical back. I think the question about his speed, his agility, the make you miss, the cutting, I think that'll translate. I don't know if the physicality will translate.
Yeah, because he was the unquestioned goal line option at Michigan. He was really effective, but like, is he really going to have that role? Is Gus, like, he goes to the Chargers, is Gus Edwards losing that role to him? I don't think so.
No.
I'm trying to think of other landing spots. Like, does Rico Dowdle get that role in Dallas if he goes to Dallas? Like, I don't know if teams will give him that role. And then if he's not being used in the passing game, like, as much as I like him as a player, how much upside does he actually have in fantasy? Because there's going to be games where if he gets in a good landing spot where he has 15, 16 carries, but if he's not the third down option and he's not the goal line option, that doesn't do a ton for us in fantasy. And because he doesn't have this crazy, like, when he gets in the open field, his open field awareness of where the lead block is phenomenal.
Yes.
But like, he's not going to rip off a ton of these 45 plus yard runs, I don't think. So like, if he's not doing that, if he's not getting usage in the passing game and he's not getting goal line work, good player.
Yeah, what's he doing? What are we doing?
Rarely somebody I want to start in fantasy unless he's getting, you know, unless for some instance the other running backs on that team happen to be out that week.
Is there any running back that we wouldn't say that about in this draft class?
That's the thing. Like, Brooks, I think, has the best chance. That's why he's the top of the class for me. I think he has the best chance of being like the clear first, second, third down running back because of the combination of good enough size. The speed isn't great, like you mentioned, but he's so fluid in the passing game.
It's just not top end.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, we're not gonna compare him to like Trey Benson. But yeah, like, that's the question. Like, Trey Benson, does anybody else in this class stand out to you as somebody that could be, we look down at, you know, we look at the calendar, it's week 11 of 2024, and this rookie running back has been a top 12 running back in fantasy for four straight weeks.
Right. Well, who's running it for Dallas?
That's what it comes down to, probably, yeah.
To me, this draft class, I don't think there's a running back that can transcend landing spot and just be amazing no matter where he goes. That's the label that we put on Bijan and Gibbs last year. Mm-hmm. And Gibbs didn't even get that opportunity all the way.
Yeah.
So it's Dallas. So let's just start with this. What are the teams that have a big running back need? We could say Dallas for sure. We could say the Chargers for sure. We could say Vegas.
It won't happen, but if for some reason Cincinnati had early draft capital on a running back, that would change the discussion. I just don't think it's going
to
happen.
Sure. I think that's fair to say, but I think they like Chase Brown a lot, and I think they might they may have upgraded with Zach Moss over Joe Mixon. Just don't tell anybody in Houston that. Minnesota, Aaron Jones is basically on a one-year deal. Chuba Hubbard's in a contract year. ETN's in a contract year in Jacksonville. Chubb is on a contract
year. That's the other team I was going to say. Cleveland would be interesting for next year.
Right. So, and that's almost like, this is where I think fantasy managers have to like add a new layer that they don't necessarily think about when it comes to the running backs. You got to think about the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and you know the way it works in fantasy is we'll start thinking, yeah, this is going to be a great situation next year. And then something will happen and it'll turn into a great situation this year. Okay. Yeah. So like if Carolina does find a running back.
Look at Zamir White right now.
Guy. Arizona. I know that James Conner is awesome. He helped me make the playoffs in a bunch of leagues last year. We know he has a hard time staying healthy. Cleveland, same thing. These are all spots that we're talking about where, you know, there's a veteran running back in place, and this includes Jacksonville. There might be an opening next year. At bare minimum, a team's going to be able to get leverage on the running back that's been there and say, hey, we don't have to give you top dollar to come back because we just drafted X.
Yeah. X
meaning, you know, whoever they just drafted from this draft
class. I think as it always is with the position, draft capital is going to be important, but I've kind of been in the same thought process of like, I want to see who Dallas drafts and when they do it. And there's a good chance whoever that is going to be the top rookie in this class for fantasy. And then there's players in this class that like, it's not a terrible class by any means. It's just nowhere close to A, the wide receiver position in the same class, nope. B, the pass running back classes. So it is tough.
Everybody's got a wart, at least one big wart.
Before we go to wide receiver, though, give me whether it's Trey Benson, who we haven't talked about, whether it's Braylon Allen, or if it's somebody even, you know, maybe even more of a sleeper. Give me one running back that you think, because I do remember once upon a time you were high on someone named Alfred Morris in the past, if I'm not mistaken. And he worked out. He was one of my favorite players ever.
Mine too. Oh, is there a running back like Alfred Morris in this class where if he just gets the right kind of opportunity? I
know a lot of people like Audric Estime.
Estime might be that guy. I think he's better than he tested at the combine.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of older running backs in this draft class. I went to the Senior Bowl, and my favorite running back there was a guy named Ray Davis, who doesn't necessarily have breakaway speed, but man, he can do everything else in that offense. But he's going to be 25 years old this year. So he really, really needs magical landing spot.
Yeah. He's like the Velus Jones of this class. Like,
yeah, which probably isn't going to – it probably means that he had an awesome week at the Senior Bowl and good for him. But or maybe he works on kick returns. You know, he could be a day three pick where an NFL team uses him on kick returns and isn't really a consideration to be a starter. But I love the way that he ran, love the way that he caught the football, physical type of running back, 5'9", 220 about there. I could see him, if he got the opportunity, being that type of sleeper running back that we're talking about. And there's other sleepers, too, in this class. You know, I did a podcast today, our Fantasy Football Today podcast, with evaluator Chris Trapasso. He works with us at CBS Sports. Loves Isaiah Davis from South Dakota State. We could say this about any of these guys. They end up in the right spot.
Yeah. Somebody's gonna break out.
Right.
It's gonna happen. So, it happens every year.
And all the talking heads in fantasy, us included, will know that guy and we'll say, oh, it's gonna be him. He's gonna be the one to do it. But there's half the league is looking for a running back right now.
Yeah.
And the other half that you might not think is looking for a running back, they'll go and grab one too, just so that they beef up at the position. It's just a matter of which running back they need, a wide receiver,
but the Buffalo Bills will draft a running back because they tried with Latavius Murray and at times Damian Harris, both off the roster now. Damian Harris just retired. Like, they will draft maybe Estime, maybe somebody they could use at the goal line because they have that. I know they brought back Ty Johnson, who was really good for them last year. But
sure he was.
That's a team that will – you know,
well, we know what Buffalo's doing at the goal line, Adam.
We do. And it won't matter because, like, I was watching the Masters yesterday, obviously the legend Jim Nantz on the call. And I was telling my family, I was like, I love Jim Nantz. I struggle to listen to him because I get PTSD now because of all the almost Buffalo Bills victories in the playoffs that he was calling. Just tough stuff. But maybe a wide receiver can help them. Obviously, they need one. Let's get to the wide receivers in this class, Dave. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. So if you want to talk about the strengths of the top three in this class, go for it. I think in any other class, like I think the consensus is Marv is the top wide receiver, but in any other class, you can make the case for the other two to easily be the wide receiver one. They're that good. Just amazing players. All three should get top 10 draft capital. But the landing spot obviously matters because, you know, we could have one player go to Arizona, one player go to the Giants, one player go to the Bears, and all of a sudden it's clear who the you project to be the best for fantasy. But just how incredibly good are these three wide receivers?
They're excellent. And it really comes down to what you're looking for from a wide receiver, because each of them excel in slightly different ways. Yeah, you can line them up wherever you want, and they can be wide receiver ones for your team. But to me, I watch Marvin Harrison, I think to myself, this dude's going to be able to get open for the next 10 years. Like, he doesn't have the breakaway speed of Malik Nabers, and he doesn't have the same physicality as Malik Nabers has, but he's such a well-trained route runner, which isn't a surprise given who he is and who he's learned from. And he's got great hands, and he's bigger than his dad. So it just makes him an outstanding red zone weapon, third down weapon, first down weapon, just someone that can have that timing down with the quarterback. And I think to Kyler Murray and how the numbers were with DeAndre Hopkins, they were great. And I think Marvin Harrison can be the new DeAndre Hopkins in Arizona. So that's my guess is where he goes. Nabers has the deep speed. He can eventually be a great route runner. He didn't run as nuanced of a route tree and is nearly the technician that Marvin
Double
Harrison
moves
was.
Were absolutely disgusting, though.
Yeah, that's
they
true.
Were so good.
And he made
there's
some
been a, there's been a lot of comps. Does he remind you of Odell Beckham at all?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Reminds me of Chase a little bit. Like there are elements to everybody that went to LSU, except for Jarvis Landry, that he does. And I think teams look at him the exact same way and say, this can be a field stretcher, a guy that we can get the ball in short area and or on crossing patterns, over patterns, and he can go and add that yak. I guarantee you that Kyle Shanahan probably watched a little bit and went, gosh, I wish I could get him. And now there's going to be a team that runs that type of offense that probably will get him, or it'll be like the Chargers and we'll be a little sad about it because it's not the same type of offense.
35% broken tackle rate is insane.
It is insane. He's much more physical than Harrison. I think he's going to be very, very good too. And I think Odunze is a combination of the two.
Listen, Dave. If Brandon Bean can do something in this draft, if he can find a way to get up to Rome Odunze, I will be the happiest man on the planet. I
would you give
love
up your
Rome.
First next year to do it?
Yep. I think he's that good.
I wonder if they're thinking about it. And I think Chicago only has four picks in this draft.
That's the thing. And when he had his press conference after the Stephon Diggs trade, he definitely sounded like he wasn't even close. Obviously, we know he's not done at wide receiver, but it sounded more like he wasn't just not finished, but it was more like he has something planned. Whether it's I think they could trade up. What's Jacksonville, 17? Or are they 15?
Yeah, they're 17, and that's the other team that needs.
I think they might try to trade up to 15 or 16 to get ahead of Jacksonville for Brian Thomas, maybe. But if they can find a way to get Rome, to me, he reminds me of a more physical Chris Olave. Like he...
Oh, that's good.
I think he's amazing.
Yeah, I do too. All three of these guys are. And I'm sure Buffalo would love to have the last of the three, even if it costs them their one next year to go up and get them. It's just those teams that are picking in the top 10, do they really want to go all the way down to 28?
Mm-hmm.
I think Chicago might be down. But I don't know if
that's
any
the problem.
Of
that's the only team that even makes a little bit of sense because you just brought in Keenan Allen. You obviously have other they could obviously go edge, but yeah. Get that extra draft capital. Yeah, obviously I think teams should start honestly just saying, okay, maybe our depth chart has two really good wide receivers. Who cares? Why not have three? Why not have four?
Well, in Chicago's case, they could have all three of those guys for a couple of seasons and then they'll eventually move on from Keenan Allen.
Keenan Allen's 31.
Or they reduce his role a little bit. Now, they would be a lot of fun. And it's really hard. I mean, we've seen it across the league. San Francisco is a great example. It sucks for fantasy, but it's great for the quarterback.
Yeah.
They've got so many weapons to go to. It'll be interesting if that's the route Chicago decides to go. I would think Chicago would address their pass rush at 9 if they keep the pick.
Same. But yeah, really all it comes down to is like landing spot. Like Chargers is elite. Like 46% of their targets are gone from last year. Cardinals is elite, obviously. You mentioned the stuff with Hopkins. Like Hopkins, I think it was the 2021 season, he averaged like over 10 targets per game, 29% target share. And then Hollywood Brown, remember the following season, the first 6 weeks Hopkins was suspended, 26% target share, 23% target per out run rate, 10 targets per game in those games. So Marvin Harrison, if he goes to Arizona, they could trade back, but if he goes there, he is going to be getting, what, 150 targets probably?
Could be in that range. And yeah. That's not hyperbole. That's
exactly
legitimately what he could end up doing.
So elite players, I'm excited to see them thrive at the NFL level. But this class is deep. There's a reason that there's been so much discussion about it, because Brian Thomas Jr. led the nation in touchdowns last year. Really, really explosive player at LSU. One of my favorite players in this class would not be opposed to the Bills drafting him if he's there at 28, is A.D. Mitchell. A.D. Mitchell is kind of polarizing too. Either people love him because of what they see on film, or they look at the production profile and say, that's it? But I don't think the quarterbacks did him any favor at Texas, to be honest. And he's played wherever he's been, whether it was at Georgia or Texas. A lot of run-first offenses I don't think helped him either. What do you think of those two players who I think consensus-wise, along with Xavier Worthy, probably the three next wide receivers on this in this draft class? I mentioned it. I love A.D. Mitchell. I think he's awesome. Brian Thomas Jr., my favorite part about his game, obviously in college, you only need 1 foot to stay in bounds. Brian Thomas didn't care. He would consistently have amazing sideline awareness, especially towards the end zone. He would still get 2 feet in. Like, I think that's a really underrated trait for a player that young playing at the collegiate level to say, you know what, I'm getting 2 feet down. So I think that's obviously on top of the other amazing things he can do. And then Xavier Worthy, obviously, just watched the draft combine. But that's not all he can do. He is not just somebody that you just throw, tell him to run a streak and throw it over everybody's head and hopefully he goes and gets it. He is a lot more than that.
And it kind of goes back to what I said about the first three receivers. And it's, what do you want out of your wide receiver? Mm-hmm. Brian Thomas, he's going to be alluring to NFL coaches because he's, what is he, 6'3"? And he runs a 4.3. So you don't see that very often. But we have seen receivers with that type of profile fizzle out. And I worry a little bit about, you know, how quickly can he add technique to his game? How can he add more to his route tree? He ran 2 routes on half of all of his routes at LSU. So is he going to be predictable for defensive backs? He's lean. Is he going to be pushed around by defensive backs? And that's how they slow him down. That makes me a little bit nervous with Thomas. Obviously, his upside goes through the roof if he's paired with an offense that's clever and a quarterback who can throw it deep, or, you know, a quarterback that can get him the ball in short range, and then he's schemed open on tunnel screens. I don't know if that's going to happen. So I don't mind saying, all right, fine, he's around the 4th best wide receiver in the class, but can he really – could he put up numbers to be better than any of the first three? I'd be a little surprised by that, even though he had some great touchdowns from Jaden Daniels last year. A lot of them were deep throws. He also might be 10th or 12th in fantasy points among wide receivers in this draft.
And you mentioned that the funny thing is, like, Brian Thomas is obviously getting a lot of buzz with Buffalo. They obviously have the quarterback to throw the deep ball, obviously, like you mentioned, but their offense is not built off screens and yak. It hasn't been for years. I think that's what they want to change finally. So that would be interesting to see if Joe Brady adds more of that. The RPO, I think, is going to be more evident this season. But, man, for me, I've been going back and forth between Brian Thomas and A.D. Mitchell as my wide receiver 4. I think A.D. Mitchell is way better than his production shows. I think the fluidity of his routes at his size, especially on double moves, really impressive. I think his ball tracking in midair is really good. Remember the touchdown against Washington where seemed like he jumped early and it didn't matter. There's a lot of people that are, you know, worried about him, you know, not giving it all on some routes when he knows he's not the target for that play.
Yep.
That's Schneider fair. That's fair. It's definitely fair. He
admitted that at the combine, Adam.
He said,
quote, "I never run routes full speed. That's just a part of my game that allows me to run routes for the whole drive and mostly just feel like I'm in control when I run routes," end quote.
Oh, I think that's some crazy red flag.
Well, what do you think of AD Mitchell? If he intends to keep it that way in the NFL.
For sure, for sure. I guess we can just, you know, pair them together. What do you think of the Texas wide receivers?
I wonder if Worthy is a little bit better than Mitchell. And I know that Mitchell has the size, but I'm really curious why he didn't want to run routes full speed. Mm-hmm. I get varying your tempo, and Worthy did that too. I just thought that that was strange. He missed nine tackles, or he forced nine missed tackles in college. Mitchell did. I thought he was lazy as a blocker. How do you go from Georgia to Texas? I know he had a daughter and he wanted to be closer to her. Is that really the reason? Or did Georgia kind of tell him, listen, man, you made some great plays for us, but it might not be what we're looking for. Whereas Worthy, just he found he would get open a lot. You mentioned the Texas quarterback situation. I'm hoping Quinn Ewers makes a step forward this year. But I think Worthy is more than just Marquise Goodwin. You know what I'm saying? I think I think he's a good route runner. I think he can work in the intermediate areas and still make a difference there too. You kind of get a Tank Dell vibe from him. And you don't really see the crazy speed that often on film with him. So maybe it's just something that Texas was doing with these guys. But I know that Worthy's undersized. We're living in a time right now in the NFL where smaller receivers are making plays.
Yeah, and this is why I think it's very interesting. You mentioned the Tank Dell comparison. I think it's interesting. I think Tank Dell against press coverage was 50 times better because his release package off the line, like it did, like that was a lot of the concern. And then he went up to the Senior Bowl and nobody, like he would face press coverage in the Senior Bowl. Nobody could touch him.
No,
doesn't matter. Didn't matter if they were 6'5", didn't matter. Did not matter. Worthy's not that level, not even close against press coverage. He actually struggled against press coverage, but here's a scenario where I think it could be terrifying. What if he goes to the Kansas City Chiefs in the back end of the first round? They obviously have situations now where they might have to look at the wide receiver position. Hollywood Brown, newsflash, he will not be there next year. It's a one-year rental. He's probably going to have a comeback season and then go make more next year because this team that traded Tyreek Hill, they're not going to give wide receivers these huge contracts, especially after winning the Super Bowls. So you have Xavier Worthy on a team that, according to FTN data, has ranked fourth, third, and fourth in pre-snap motion the last three seasons at around 50%. We know that with Mahomes and Andy Reid, they've been as screen-heavy as anybody. You put Xavier Worthy in that system, not to mention against teams are playing zone so much nowadays anyway, that probably started with Kansas City. So he's going to be facing this team that, you know, it's going to open up everything else for everybody else. But then he's also going to be able to do all the other stuff on top of getting free releases off pre-snap motion. You know, I just think it's obviously not a hot take that it's such a great landing spot, but I think for so many other reasons other than the fact that, oh, they might actually need a wide receiver. Schematically, I think it's perfect for Xavier Worthy. And I'll tell you what, if he ended up going to Kansas City at the end of the first round, I think he would go. There's a chance he would be the fourth wide receiver drafted in rookie drafts. It would not surprise me.
I wouldn't be in rookie-only drafts. I would tend to agree. In redraft, I'm not sure if he should go quite that high. I think that's where he would end up going because it's Kansas City. But we've seen...
I would probably still love whatever Buffalo takes.
Right, sure. But like Rashee Rice was definitely not the normal type of rookie receiver as far as adapting to Andy Reid's offense.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't play like 70% of snaps till like late. And right. Then once he did, he was...
How often have receivers in Andy Reid's offense adapted as well as Rice has? It's rare.
Mm-hmm.
It's really
the thing with Rashee Rice too is so interesting. At SMU, he was more of like a contested catch guy. And then he goes to Kansas City and he's getting all these scheme targets and touches and he's really, really good with the system and he went off in the second half. So what about other receivers that are going probably in the second round that, again, they could go to Kansas City? There's a lot of receivers in this class that I think, like if you have, especially in rookie drafts, if you have early to mid second round picks, you should be pretty damn excited because there's some really good players that should land in some pretty good spots. The Colts, Jacksonville, maybe. I mentioned the Chiefs already. Obviously, if Buffalo doesn't go receiver in the first round, there's a lot of players that I think can be not just like serviceable year one, but you know, by week seven, week eight, they could be, you know, every week flex plays at the worst. There's some really good players left still.
And so the guys that have speed are like Troy Franklin, yep. Xavier Leggett.
Put him on the Colts, please. That is my dream scenario.
Is what?
Xavier Leggett on the Colts. I think he is so perfect for Shane Steichen's RPO scheme. I think it's perfect because
sure.
That's all they led the league at almost 19% in terms of RPO usage according to FTN data. A lot of it, when you're running the RPO, is obviously a slant because you have to get the ball out immediately. That was Michael Pittman's role. I think Pittman can do that, but man, if you get Xavier Leggett in that role, and like the Colts receivers, not a lot of speed right now in that offense. Pittman, not really known for his speed. Josh Downs is fine. Alec Pierce is a deep threat that really hasn't panned out for them. I think he would be, I'm not saying he'd be like a viable starter for fantasy anytime soon, maybe, but the pace of play is fantasy friendly, and I think he'd be a really, really good scheme fit for them. And like he's gotten some, what, A.J. Brown comps, I'd imagine, because of, the school, but also the way he was scheme touches in college.
Yeah.
What if Shane Steichen has any experience with A.J. Brown?
Right. But he was also more of a one-year wonder.
That is the other thing, yeah.
Struggled for
late
a long
breakout.
Time. But if it all clicked, it all clicked, and he can carry that with him into the next level. So there's those types of receivers that have that top-end speed that I think they'll go to. But there's also a lot of receivers that can run routes really well. Ladd McConkey's on that list. Mm-hmm. Ricky Pearsall's on that list. Roman Wilson's on that list. I'm curious if you've watched Malachi Corley and if you think he belongs on that list. But these are going to be the guys that are taken in rounds 2 and 3, maybe won't necessarily be fantasy favorites, almost certainly not in non-PPR, but in full PPR, if they land in spots where they're going to get a lot of targets and be that secondary option, they've got potential to be great. And I loved Wilson at the Senior Bowl. And I think Wilson can be more than just a slot receiver. I think he mm-hmm. could ultimately evolve into being a number one like he was at Michigan. That was the number one guy for J.J. McCarthy at Michigan.
Yeah, I am very excited because like in one of my main leagues, I have three selections in the second round. I have two. I have a mid first and then a late first. So like, yeah, I'm going to be definitely keeping a strong eye on a lot of these receivers. Like Buffalo is the chalk for landing spot that we want to see, but like what other spots would you be really excited about for not just the obvious wide receivers, like other than, I guess I'm not really counting like the Chargers. Maybe the Chargers should count because they might not even go wide receiver in the first round, but I'm not really counting like Arizona because whether they trade back or not, like they're taking a wide receiver in the first round, I'd imagine. Sure. The Giants, we haven't talked about them. Like, would that be such a terrible landing spot that you'd be just completely not off? Like, obviously they're going to take one of the top three receivers, but what non-Buffalo landing spot, I guess, for a wide receiver would you really like to see?
Well, Kansas City.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's Jacksonville's probably easier. Sneaky. I think it's easier to list the teams that are unlikely to add a receiver than the teams that are. Mm-hmm. I mean, all San Francisco has to do is trade Brandon Ayuk, and then they're in business. You don't think Philadelphia would be.
Oh, you know who we haven't talked about, Dave?
Who?
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh absolutely needs a wide receiver. They need somebody. I'm sure they're looking for somebody with speed. Maybe they're looking for one of those route runners too. Maybe Roman Wilson.
If you look at the receivers, they need somebody to play in the slot right now.
Sure. So like Roman Wilson, great route runner, certainly could be a slot receiver, just like McConkey, just like Pearsall. But he's got a little bit more flash, I think, than those two do on longer routes. And he's got great hands. It's just a matter of whether or not he's big enough.
Anything else wide receiver before we quickly close out with tight ends? Dave, you have been amazing as always. It's always a blast chatting with you.
Let's roll right to the fourth best receiver in this draft class, and that's Brock Bowers.
I mean, like I feel like we've gotten, it's always dangerous to play the game of, oh, tight ends deep, but like Sam Laporta last year, Kincaid last year, obviously Trey McBride last year, like Kyle Pitts hopefully this year finally. But man, like Brock Bowers in terms of prospects, like where does he rank on the Kyle Pitts scale, TJ Hockenson scale? Like obviously I would not consider myself a massive college football fan, but I've known his name for quite some time. He's been that good.
He'd be right, but I can't say he's as good of a receiver as Odunze, and there's obviously things that a bunch of these other receivers do better than Bowers. But as far as a guy who can make plays with a unique physique, I think Bowers kind of sets himself apart from the rest of the crew. Now, he's made a lot of downfield throws, but he really lived on a low A dot last year at Georgia, and I'm hoping that he can be much more than a guy that's going to, you know, catch a pop pass or a very short slant and try and make a play after and burrow through defenders. I'd like to see him use more down the seam like Dalton Kincaid did when he was in college. Like to see him use more in a West Coast offense where he breaks on an in route and the ball's already being thrown to him like LaPorta got a lot last year. And if he can do that and he can prove that and be consistent with it, man, he will be a difference maker in fantasy for sure. Just like these other players, it's going to come down to what team is he on, who else is on his team, who's throwing to him, how often is this team going to throw. And that's why I'm kind of scared to death that the Chargers take him, because they'll just love the physicality that Bowers brings. But that's can he be the number one guy in that offense? I guess. Does it mean he's going to be amazing for fantasy? I bet he'd be rather inefficient for fantasy as the number one guy in LA. Yeah. I want to see him be the number two guy for a team.
Let me ask you about this team that I think there's been some buzz. I don't know if he's there. It's probably right around where he goes if like the Jets don't take him at 10.
I don't think the Jets are taking him at 10.
Well, if that's the case, what about the Indianapolis Colts, who I mentioned earlier?
So the Colts are one of the teams, and I think the Bengals are the other one. We talked about that on our draft prop show.
The Bengals would be we've been waiting.
Not the same boat as the 49ers with T. Higgins. They can keep him for a year, and then they let him go. And then Bowers could be the replacement as the number two guy. It would kind of suck for a year.
I mean, Bowers would essentially be their slot receiver this year.
Yeah. Imagine him in that offense. I think it would be outstanding. And then once Higgins leaves and they add somebody new in 2025, Bowers would be the number two target getter in that offense. And by next year, I would imagine he'd be much more well-rounded as a route runner and be a much more dangerous option for all the other teams in the AFC to deal with. And then Indy would be good too, because he'd be the number two option there. You talked about it with Leggett, just getting open in space and making a play after the catch. I mean, hell, that's basically what I was saying that the Bulldogs did with Bowers last year before he got hurt.
Yeah. Bowers is really, really good. I don't know. It's going to be tough to have a rookie season like we just saw from Sam LaPorta. Even like quietly, Kincaid's rookie season, when you compare it to rookie tight end seasons in the past, was still really, really good. So we know the position is tough right out of the gate, but this feels like a prospect, especially if he gets in the right landing spot where he could have a top 10 season without anybody being shocked. I guess the last tight end I'll talk about is Jadeveon Sanders. I think he could go third round maybe to a team like I mentioned, Washington, who needs a tight end right now. He has that field stretching ability. Miami was kind of interesting, but they did bring in Janu. I still think it's a possibility just because that team desperately needs more than Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. Like, it was just, they got nothing from any other pass catcher last year. So those two teams kind of stand out as somebody or as a team that could take Sanders, and he could be, I don't know if he's going to be a consistent fantasy producer because, again, he played that Texas team too. That was, you know, you had A.D. Mitchell, you had Xavier Worthy. He's probably going to be somebody that you occasionally have some plays where he's down the seam. After the catch, he was like, not just like, you know, he's got a good size speed combination, but his ability to kind of like change direction at that size is actually way more impressive than I thought it was going to be at that size. So, tight end, obviously it's unlikely that anybody outside of Brock Bowers in this class is very fantasy relevant, but I did want to give Jadeveon Sanders a shout.
Sure. He's an interesting one. Ben Sinnett's an interesting one. Jaheim Bell from Florida State was someone that caught my eye at the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
Landing spot. Same thing we've been saying about everybody.
But, Dave, that'll do it. This has been a blast. Like I said, it's always absolutely, absolutely special getting to chat with you. It's a dangerous time to talk football and the draft, because you look all of a sudden at the clock and you've been speaking for an hour, but I appreciate the time. One more time, tell everybody what's going on at CBS Fantasy, CBSSports.com, obviously where they can find you on socials. And, let me ask you this real quick. Did you watch and or enjoy WrestleMania?
I did see the end of WrestleMania and enjoyed the hell out of it. It was pretty fun. Good show. it was awesome. And glad that they did what they did. Look for the NFL draft prop show from Sportsline. Go to youtube.com/sportsline. It's the Early Edge NFL Draft Prop Show. We will have, I believe, multiple shows this coming week, and we will be live the night before the draft and the day after day one of the draft, if that makes sense. So Wednesday and Friday, we're bookending day one of the NFL draft with player props to help you profit a little bit, make your wallet a little bit fatter. And then, of course, CBS Sports Fantasy, Fantasy Football Today is the name of our podcast. We're every day during the football season and basically during the offseason as well, helping you get ready to dominate your friends in fantasy this coming year.
Exciting time. Appreciate the time as always, Dave. Make sure you check out all the great stuff going on at CBS Sports and CBS Fantasy. Thanks for listening. It's exciting to have the podcast back. Again, FTN Fantasy, if you're listening to this on Tuesday or after Tuesday, we have had a new site design, so I'm excited about that. Check it out. And, of course, all the great content at FTNFantasy.com. For Dave, I'm Adam. Hopefully you enjoy the NFL draft. Hopefully things go well for you in your rookie drafts and for your NFL teams. Until next time, we'll talk to you. Have a good one.